Welcome to How to Talk to Kids About Anything with Dr. Robin Silverman, a podcast loaded with practical tips, powerful scripts, personal stories, and simple steps to make even the toughest conversations easier. So get ready to get the information you need to make the impact you want from someone you trust, your friend, parenting expert, Dr. Robin Silverman.
We know that setting goals and adjusting our daily attitude are vital ingredients for dream fulfillment. For our young people these days, they need to use their unique set of skills, work their hardest, find some of this balance between what they truly want and what they're required to do to get through school and have friends and navigate life. Once we do all that, everything is bound to go just as planned, right? Well, not exactly. What if everything doesn't go your way? How do you keep going when the odds are stacked against you and you keep falling short? Can we really achieve our dreams even if we are the proverbial underdog? For this conversation, I will be talking together with Jessie LeBeau. Jessie LeBeau is one of today's highly sought after youth motivational speakers, authors, and motivators. His unlikely underdog story has inspired millions of teens through his speaking best-selling books, one of which is called Among the Giants, which I have read cover to cover. He's also inspired people through his youth programs. He's one of the world's premier basketball trick artists and is regularly featured on TV, film, and international tours. I've seen a bunch of his videos. They're so entertaining. Jessie's new reality series, The LeBeau Show, allows viewers the chance to follow him around the country and see firsthand the major impact he's having on youth, particularly teens, who are struggling, as we all know. In 2017, he started the Attitude is Everything Foundation as a resource for young people to have ongoing support throughout their difficult teenage years, particularly targeting the area of self-esteem, confidence, and mental health, all of which we are all extremely interested in. So welcome, Jessie LeBeau, to How to Talk to Kids About Anything.
Wow, what an intro. I feel like I need a sip of water just hearing you say all that stuff. That was awesome. I'm excited to be here with you.
Thank you so very much. That's high compliments from a premier coach and speaker. So I appreciate that. Before we get into the main topic of our conversation, can you tell us what gets you up in the morning and what got you so interested in inspiring young people to set goals, adjust their attitude, and achieve their dreams?
Yeah, great question. I love it. So really, and it's going to sound a little cliche, but I think it's finding your passion and finding your purpose. And for me, that was always basketball growing up. I grew up on a little island in Alaska, and I was just in love with basketball, and I wanted to be a basketball player. And so that was the thing that got me up early and got me taking the boat to school early so that I could practice. And I always had this dream of being an NBA basketball player. And it didn't work out because I'm 5'7" and not good enough to be in the NBA, unfortunately. But I was able to do a lot with basketball. And eventually, I was traveling around the world playing basketball with Allen Iverson. And we came back to my hometown, and people lined up after the game. And I knew a lot of these kids' parents and older brothers and sisters, being from a small town in Alaska. And really, from that was a light bulb moment for me that I could use basketball as a hook and as a tool to capture kids' attention. And then I could share my story. And so I didn't end up making it to the NBA or playing professional basketball overseas, but I still get to use basketball and doing tricks and entertaining as part of my everyday life. So I think my dream was realized in actually an even more fulfilling and unique and bigger way. And so for me, that's really what it is. Like, I am so much more passionate about this now than I was about basketball, that I am just floored every day to get up and work on these things. I've had to really work on learning to enjoy the journey, because I'm a type A going for it. What's the big achievement at the end? And everyone I talk to is like, hey, this is great. You're doing things, but you got to enjoy the process right now. So I really think it is finding that thing. And it was trying a lot of different things before I found it. And then not being afraid to deviate from that dream a little bit and tweak it. And you might ultimately find something even better than you planned in the beginning.
I love that. And it's interesting to, you know, I was just talking about feeling like you're falling short, you because you were short and are short, but that's okay because falling short actually puts you ahead of the game in a completely different area. I always find it interesting. People ask me, well, how did you wind up going on the path that you did? And how did you wind up writing this book or being on Today Show or Good Morning America? How did you find it? There's no specific route that you take to get some, you know, to these specific places. It's not like, oh, I went to college for doing this specific thing. But sometimes what we find with young people is that when they're growing up, they don't even know that there is an option out there that isn't the one that everybody knows about. Like they didn't know that, you know, okay, you can use basketball in this very unique way, or, you know, you want to work to help young people. It's not just being a teacher or just being a doctor. You can also go in all of these other directions. You can be a youth speaker and you can write books for, you know, young people and you can speak for them. So there's a lot that's there. In your book, Among the Giants, you talk about the many lessons that you learned and tout when you're speaking with young people about goals and dreams. Tell us what you would say are your top, you know, two or three lessons that you would hope every young person could hear, learn from, and put into practice.
Yeah, and there's so much good stuff there. So being so involved in sports, my older brother was like the star basketball player in our little town. So when I was a kid, I was 9 years younger than him. So he was in high school hitting these three-pointers. There would be thousands of people because it was kind of like Texas in football, Alaska in basketball. You're in the gym. It's warm. There's light. So a lot of people would show up to the games. And it was so exhilarating to go and watch this. And so that's kind of where my passion came from, was I wanted to be like my older brother, Luke. And what we would do is my dad and I would go watch games, whether it was Little League baseball, soccer, or basketball. Those were the three main sports there. And we would watch the older kids play in these games, and we'd watch the star players. And the thing that we would look for was not if they got the game-winning hit or made an incredible play. It was the things that they did when they failed. When they struck out, when they dropped the pass, when they missed the shot, how did they act in those moments? And that really told us the difference if they were going to go on to be great and be successful. Did they blame the umpire or the referee? Mm. Did they storm off the field? Did they cuss out their teammates? Did they high five their teammates? How did they respond in those times? Because that really shows you how you're going to be in life, which is a more important game, because most of us and most kids aren't going to go professional in a sport, even though every parent is thinking they are and hoping that they will. It's a very, very small percentage. And so many parents miss the boat of, okay, what are the bigger lessons they should be learning? Teamwork, the power of hard work and sacrificing, how to handle losing. So the three words, and I'm staring at it on my back screen on the computer and on my phone, but it's attitude is everything. And even in the basketball tour bus I'm in right now, it has attitude is everything on the side. And I'm so grateful. You know, my dad was just like anyone else, a very flawed person, was figuring it out as he was going. But he taught me that bad things are going to happen in life, just like in sports. But what do you do when those bad things happen? Because that's going to make the difference. And you really have two choices. You can blame other people. You can make excuses. You can give up. And that's kind of the easy coward's way out, in my opinion. Or you can choose to throw away those excuses and create the life that you want to live. And you can make the best of the situation. What now? What can I do now? So the attitude piece is such a huge one. And it's one that was life-changing for me in various stages in my life.
You know, you really needed to have that very strong, positive attitude and resilient attitude when you were the underdog, considered your, you know, the underdog in so much of what you were doing. You have always been that smaller fish in a pond of whales. So how do you outplay stronger athletes? Or let's generalize it for those who are listening. We've got parents, we've got educators, we've got coaches listening. We've got almost over 3 million downloads right now. So we've got a huge audience of very loyal. I've like the best listeners ever. So let's generalize to them. How do we outplay, outskill, out whatever, a more talented, let's say, person in the pond when you feel like the underdog?
Yeah. So I'll quote Kevin Durant in a movie that I got to do called Thunderstruck. So I got to see this line repeated over and over again, and it popped in my head. And it was, hard work beats talent when talent fails to work hard. Mm. So from my own personal experience with basketball, being the smaller person, being not as strong, not as fast, can't jump. I could barely, you know, a joke. I could barely touch the net. I could touch the net. Okay. But
you can jump.
Yeah, they see me dunking in these different commercials and movies, and I'm like, well, yeah, they had trampolines, and I had some cases I had a wire on, the hoops maybe 7.5 feet, like there's some Hollywood special effects going on. But I know for me, the thing that made the difference was that I worked harder than anyone that I knew. In my little area, in little Southeast Alaska, there was no one that spent more time dribbling that doggone basketball. And I'll run into people today, and they'll be like, it's so funny because you always were dribbling a basketball around town. I was outside, like idol of mine was Pistol Pete Maravich. And there's an awesome movie called The Pistol. If you have a kid that's into basketball, go watch it. It's super old, but he was always dribbling and spinning on his finger and walking on tire tracks. And that was my life, basically the Alaska version. I was going up and down ramps and on docks and in the snow. And I loved it. And paying my dues made it so that when I stepped on the court, I was able to be so supremely confident because I knew there was no one there who had spent as much time in the gym as me. And that's the only way you can really build confidence. And that's something we talk about a lot today with kids and mental health, is their self-esteem and their confidence, right? And yes, being supportive, yes, you know, being a positive influence in their life makes all the difference. But the reality is, you can't give someone confidence. They have to earn it by racking up small wins. So in a sports analogy here, it might be, all right, learning to dribble better with my left hand, and then trying out for the team and making the team, and then getting a little more playing time, and then maybe starting later and being a captain and going on. So it's one of those things where I think that the best thing that you can do is just work your tail off. It's not glamorous. It's not the fun answer. It's not the shortcut to the front of the line. But it really comes down to this, that no one can do your push-ups for you. I love that quote. And the harder you work, the luckier you get. So I think you just kind of got to roll up your sleeves and go, all right, how bad do I want to do this thing, and pay your dues?
I couldn't agree more with that. We can't give somebody confidence. We can't praise our way into confidence. We have to do the work. We have to pay the dues. We've got to do the time. And really, confidence comes from competence. And that competence comes from repetitively doing the thing that we want to be gifted at. Gifts usually aren't just handed out left, right, and sideways. We develop our gifts. We develop our strengths. Sometimes we don't even know that we can have a strength because, again, we're the underdog, but we can develop that strength by working hard. And I truly appreciate that. We have a lot of coaches and teachers listening, and yes, a lot of parents, of course, who have athletes, dancers, gymnasts, martial artists, cheer athletes listening. One of the areas that I circled back to in your book was when you had major issues with your college coach, two of them actually. Yeah. For those kids who aren't in agreement with their coaches, who aren't connecting with their coaches, but still have a love of what they're doing, whether it's soccer or whether it's gymnastics or whether it's, you know, theater and they're up on stage and they love what they're doing, but they really are just not connecting and agreeing with and liking the coach who's working with them. What is your suggestion? Do they do what you did and quit the team? Or in hindsight, if you were to give yourself some advice in that moment, would you have chosen a different path?
Yeah, great question. So that was such a difficult decision for me because I had spent my whole life, just like what we talked about, sacrificing, working hard. And here I am at the peak of 10 plus years of dedication, and I'm not getting along with the coach, and I'm completely miserable. And on top of that, I've never quit anything in my entire life. And I've always been every coach that I've ever had's favorite player because I was so into it and worked so hard and was such a team guy. So for this particular situation, I think my recommendation in hindsight would be to have boundaries, right? So know that you have something and you love, but also know that your self-respect is more important than any of those things. And that's something I've struggled with since then in my life with roommates and business people, where I'm by nature a people pleaser. And I will let people to an extent kind of walk over me like a doormat. And that was something I had to be like, hey, you know what? At a certain point, you have to stand up for yourself and you have to believe in right and wrong and choose happiness. And in that particular situation, my level of love for basketball is so high. So for me to have been able to make that choice to walk away, I was pretty miserable.
Right.
And I lost my love for the game of basketball. But the cool thing is, after I left, the next step was I had to forgive this coach. I didn't want, I was angry. I thought, I don't know if I ever said them out loud, maybe to a couple of buddies, of like things that I would like to do to get even and call this guy out and try to get him to lose his job and smash up his car. These were thoughts that definitely crossed my mind. And I let that fester in me for a while. And then I finally realized I had to let this go because it was consuming me. And I was letting this person have power over me in my life. And I chose forgiveness. And would you believe it? A few months after I chose to forgive him, I really felt a weight lifted off my shoulders, like you hear all the time. And in that short amount of time, I had gone to LA, gone to Hollywood, and I had auditioned for a commercial, and I booked something with Kobe Bryant, the dream commercial, where I put on his shoes and I get his talent and go around town and dominate all these people. And my life completely went a different direction. All these doors open through basketball, the thing I was told I wasn't supposed to be able to do. And I believed wholeheartedly with all of my heart that if I hadn't chose to forgive this coach, that I would have let that anger inside of me cloud the opportunities in front of me, and I would have not been in the position I am today. So boundaries, self-respect, choose happiness, and at the end of the day, you can move on, forgive, and maybe something great will come that's even better. I mean, I had a lot of fun playing college basketball, but I had a lot more fun being in commercials and movies and then speaking and doing basketball. So I think that would be my 2 cents for anyone that finds himself in that position with a coach or a teacher or a parent or anything like that.
So what was going on with that coach was that he was really focusing on a particular athlete who wasn't working hard, who was detrimental to the team, but was siding with him partly because the assistant coach was his brother, but also because he felt like this guy was the winner and everybody else who didn't kowtow to him was the loser. So that's really what was going on here. It was detrimental to the entire team. The entire team was upset. The morale was extremely low. And because of that, the team was not performing well. They were not winning games. And anytime that anybody was bringing something up to help the team and really think about the team, it was shot down because the coach only had a one-track mind. Is that correct?
Yeah, so that I was talking about the coach the next year. So that coach
actually ended up
getting fired, and because of those things that you were talking about. But he, in hindsight, he was a nice guy. He was just cut a little bit from a different cloth. Like he literally told us, like, "Yeah, this guy doesn't have to practice hard. We'll just turn it on in the games." And as any athlete, I've never heard someone say, "Like, we don't practice hard," especially when you're losing a lot of games. But yeah, that was a situation where everyone on the team would be in agreeance. And then we'd go into a meeting after a game or after a practice to talk about it. Everyone's like, all right, I'm going to say this. I'm going to say this. We're going to talk to it. And then they would get in there and no one would say anything because they didn't want to lose their scholarship. They didn't want
Oh, right.
those things. And I was the only one who was like, I'm willing to stand up and lose everything for what's right and be a leader.
Right.
And yeah, it did end up hurting me in the end, but that's what happens when you're a leader sometimes.
Right.
It's that it's going to sacrifice in certain areas of your life. So I
Okay.
wouldn't have changed a thing.
Excellent. So, sometimes you make a bold choice and it turns out to be exactly what you've needed to do. The signs were there, you took the chance, and it opened the door for many more things. So let's
Yeah.
talk a little bit about goal setting, because that's something that you like to focus on and know that it's important for our dream realization. So what would you say are the most important pieces of goal setting for young people so that they see them, they know them, they go after them on a consistent basis?
Yeah, so most people probably know SMART goals. So I'm all about that. Writing it down. For me, I would always have it in a place where I could see it. So at home, on the mirror, in the locker at school, because this is going to remind you all the time. And also, when you put it out there, people hold you accountable. I was so scared. I was so scared for people to know this dream of going to Hollywood and being in basketball commercials. And I had a little, I always have, I literally have them right now. I have my little notes, my little 3x5 cards that I write everything down on. And I wrote in on when I was working on a commercial fishing boat after college. I'm out in the middle of nowhere. I'm horrible at fishing. The captain doesn't like me because I like to shower a few times a day. And I don't know the knots and I get seasick. You know, it wasn't for me. And I wrote, I want to be in a commercial. I want to be in a TV show. I want to be in a movie. And of course, as why wouldn't it go like this? They found my little 3x5 card. They call me into the galley, everyone, and they make fun of me. And he goes, oh, you know, basically I'm an idiot and I'm not going to do any of these things. And again, it was that attitude. All right, do I listen to these people and give up? Or do I believe to go in the thing in my heart that I want to go for? And so writing those goals was so valuable to me, and it ended up working out in that respect. So I think declaring them publicly later in my life, I wanted to have a TV show where I could travel around, highlight the kids that we're working with when I go to these schools and help families that are having a hard time. And so give me this bigger platform to be able to help more people. And everywhere I went, I took all kinds of meetings. I had people dangle the carrot in front of me, but they were like, you're not famous enough. You don't have enough followers. People don't want to watch shows that help people. They want to watch drama like the Kardashians. And so it was this constant, no, you're not good enough. You're not strong enough. And I'd put it out there and then people are like checking in with you, like, well, what's going on with that show? You said you were doing it, Jesse. And now all of a sudden I feel stupid if I don't figure out how to make this happen. And I used to do this in a talk, and then I would show, and here's the trailer for my new show, executive produced by Mark Wahlberg. And it was this just amazing moment. But then the pandemic happened and that fell through, and I can't do that anymore. And we're having to start over and knock on doors again. But that's cool. And that's part of me declaring that thing that, hey, this is something that people are going to judge me for. And people are going to be like, oh, who'd give you that? You're not smart enough. Like, who are you to think you could do something like that? But it puts a little bit more pressure on you. So I like declaring it publicly. And another thing you can do is find a buddy that will hold you accountable. So here's the big goal, break it into some smaller steps, and then have you and your friend group hold each other to that. All right, what did you do this week? What did you do this month? How much further are you along? Because if you don't have those awesome relationships in your life, then you probably don't have much of a life anyways. And so getting those people that are your tribe and your team makes all the difference.
I love that, and you and I overlap a lot with this piece. We do a lot on SMART goals. We do. I add on a lot of visualization, which you do as well. For
Yeah.
those who are listening, who are like, I don't really know what you're talking about.
Yeah,
SMART
woo-woo
goals,
stuff.
like, yeah, then we want to make sure that goals are specific, that they're measurable, that you can actually know, like if you're going to be working on running, that you're now going from 1 mile to two, for example, that's measurable. And in a specific amount of time, is that goal attainable during that specific amount of time? Is it realistic given your skill set, given, you know, the parameters that you've provided for yourself? Is it time bound so that you know that it's not someday, but it's happening at a specific time, you're working on it at a specific time. I like to add that it's agreed upon, especially when we're dealing with young people, because instead I sub out attainable, that A, for agreed upon, because we need to be part of the team when it comes to our young people. Our young people need to know that dad's driving, you know, mom's helping to pay for it, that there are people who are, you know, there's a coach there who's helping us. So we need an agreed upon. It's not enough for a teenager to say, here's my goal, without the support to do it. So that's really important.
I love that so much. That's so, that parent piece is such a crucial piece. And I'll give you a little personal 30 second here. My mom, when I was on that fishing boat, I had three choices I was looking at. Go sell carpet in Orange County and make $80,000 a year.
Right.
Yeah. Go play basketball in Hungary and make like nothing and be the only one that spoke English. Or go to LA and try to do basketball commercials. And my mom goes, every time you talk about going and trying to do these basketball commercials, you light up, you get excited, you've saved up money fishing on this boat. Why don't you just go for it?
Oh, I love
if
that.
It doesn't work out, you can always come back and have a place to stay here.
And sell carpets
that
you want to.
That safety net, that parent buy-in made all the difference and completely transformed the direction of my life.
Excellent. Yeah, that was so important. Parents, the teachers, the coaches, when we are on board and we declare that we are on board, that we're here for our child, for our athlete, for our student, it makes all the difference. You know, the research tells us that young people need at least three adults in their lives to help them through need or challenge. And when they don't have that, when the odds are stacked against them, they tend to falter. So we need to tell them we are here for them. One of the things that I picked up on while you were just talking now is, you know, that repetitive voice inside our heads, because people are telling us you're never going to get there. You know, you're not good enough. You're not smart enough. You're not good looking enough, whatever it is that you need in order to get to a certain point in your goal achievement. One of the areas that I often speak about when I'm presenting is how we define ourselves. This is chapter two of How to Talk to Kids About Anything, is all on self-esteem and confidence. This is why I was saying we overlap a lot.
Yeah.
The definitions that other people put on us can hold us back. But if we redefine ourselves, or we have adults in our lives that help us to redefine ourselves, we can take steps forward. So when you've been told a long time that you're not good enough, you don't have what it takes, how were you able to then either redefine yourself or repel what other people were saying, the negatives, and still maintain a definition of yourself? I am capable, I am enough, whatever your I am statement is, so that you could take a step forward in the direction of your dreams.
Yeah. So I immediately jumped to an interview I did with a guy named Shea Hillenbrand, who is a retired Major League Baseball player. He was an all-star. And we talked about the power of your self story.
Mm-hmm.
And he literally moved from California to Phoenix. And he thought his parents did that because they were mad at him, but they really did it because they wanted him to have a better opportunity to be able to make it in baseball, because he had a passion for the game. And he would practice every day, hitting, really to spite them, and carried this anger and this hate in his heart. And he had that self story that you're talking about, that I'm not good enough, they don't love me, I have to earn their love. And he had a little bit of OCD. So it was repetitive over and over and over again. And ultimately that fire and that kind of chip on his shoulder helped him get to where he went, but at the cost of his relationship with his family. And it wasn't until much later, till he was playing in All-Star games and his parents were sitting in the nosebleeds with tickets they'd bought themselves, that he had the realization and they talked and of what really happened. And so that power of that self story for me, I would say it was, I had enough people that were saying positive things in my life, and I did my best to surround myself with what we call our winner's circle. Now, at the time, I didn't know that I was doing that, but I put myself, and I like to call it, I teamed up with the basketball people in our little town. So some of them were the kids my age, but a lot of them were older kids that were a lot bigger and better than me, and adults who would kick my butt. So I had to learn how to get faster and use my left hand and shoot it quicker because they were way better than me. And so by having less people that were negative and more people that were my tribe, my community that were building me up, that made all the difference. And the confidence came because I ended up getting better and I started to score more points and win more games and get trophies and earn them, not a seventh place trophy, but something that I actually was like, no, I know I'm good at this. I can go on a basketball court with other kids my age and I can run circles around them. And it's back to that. The confidence comes from doing the hard work and then seeing those little measures along the way that show that, oh, I got to win. All right, I'm getting better. And that made all the difference for that self-story of me of like, no, I can do this. And I think when it comes to those small wins, even later in life, like I used to read this magazine called Slam Magazine. And Allen Iverson was on the cover. And that's why it was so exciting to get to go and be his teammate and travel the world with him. Cause I had his poster on my wall. And when I was early into my entertainment career, I got to be featured in Slam Magazine. Now it was just the online version of it. And I think I hit up some kid on Twitter or something. But I was like, wow, this is amazing. And if I could get on in Slam Magazine, why couldn't I be on Good Morning America or Fox and all the big media outlets that you've been on a bunch of different times? And slowly but surely, those things that seem so unattainable and so out of your grasp, it's like, no, like that's possible. Other people that do that are just like me, you know? So this is that process of building confidence and gradually over time racking up those wins.
I love that you really embraced your unique self, your specific skill. That is something that a lot of people don't know how to do. Throughout your book, you provide little videos, like opportunities to see your videos, which I really appreciated. Those were so much fun to be able to, you know, just open up your videos and see your just extremely skillful self. That how could you have possibly predicted that this is something that you had been able to do? You talk a lot about that self-motivation piece, that you really just kept going after it. We talked about this in the beginning. I know you mentioned Kyle Maynard in your book. I interviewed him. He's mentioned in a lot of my stuff. He's mentioned in my presentations. He's mentioned in several of my books. He is somebody I talk about a lot because Kyle Maynard was born with no legs and with arms just up to his elbows and has been able to achieve incredible things, even from a young age, going into football when he was little, and then eventually into wrestling and eventually into mixed martial arts. Those of you who are coaches for martial arts, you should definitely know this guy's name. Is just didn't allow anybody to define him and tell him that he was not going to be enough. He found his own way, his own special skills, so that he was able to achieve and now is a motivational speaker as well. These people that we're talking about, you, Kyle, I would put myself in this category of being self-motivated. That's a gift also that we give to ourselves, that self-motivation. But some people aren't really self-motivated to go after their goals in the same way that you have. So here's a listener question that I received when people found out that you were going to be on the show.
Awesome.
So it says, my son doesn't seem to be very interested in anything. He's 13 years old. He's content to have his friends, play video games, watch YouTube, and get his schoolwork done most of the time. How do you help someone who doesn't seem to have a passion? How do you help them to grow a passion and go after it? I'm worried.
Great question, whoever asked this. And this is something that I hear all the time because we're doing calls with parents and working with kids every week. And one of the big things is video games. And this phone seems to have a big influence, if you haven't noticed, on everyone's lives. And the thing that parents I find are a little bit on the fence about is they have somewhat of a social life through video games. But it's a very different type of social life than actually connecting with someone on person. If you've ever heard this, usually it's they're just talking smack with people. And sometimes it's kids they know from school. I don't know this particular situation because there's not more context. But a lot of times it's they've never even met these kids. They don't know what they look like. And to be honest, we don't even know if they're actually kids. So the thing that I would say as far as the motivation part is it sounds like he's an average teenager. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean that in like, yeah, he doesn't probably want to hear everything that you have to say. And he rolls his eyes about like, okay, yeah, mom, I'll get my homework done. You know, I'm going to finish this game. So what I've learned is that you have to set boundaries and systems with all of these things when it comes to technology, whether it's video games or the phone. I haven't met a person yet to date who has the self-control and willpower to be able to resist the temptation of YouTube and Snapchat and TikTok and Instagram. Like you just don't have it because whatever you're interested in, if it's, you know, cute puppies walking on the beach, you can
Me.
watch. You can watch that. My nephew, it's fishing, you know, fly fishing. You can watch that for hours and hours, and it's amazing and it's incredible that we have this. But your time is your most valuable resource. And so you have to have a conversation with your child, with your teen about, okay, what are the positive things about this? And what are the negative things? And what are some realistic time guidelines? Because I'll stand in front of an audience of a full gym with kids on both sides. So, you know, 1,000, 2,000 kids. And I'll go, okay, everyone, hold up your phone. All right, let's look into our settings. How much is the average amount of time that you're spending on your phone? And it'll be 8, 10. There was
Yes,
like
that's
20
right.
plus hours. I think they were falling asleep with their phone on. I don't know
Yeah.
how they could be getting that high, which is a whole other conversation. But to come back on track here, get some systems in place of what's okay. Get the video games out of the room, get them in the common area. Have him try new things. What are things that you can come up with together? Because the biggest thing that's really on my heart, and so I'm glad this question came up, is what I'm seeing from parents is that there is an epidemic of loneliness. And I felt that same loneliness when I was isolated on that little island in Alaska and I was told that I couldn't be a basketball player, right? But I teamed up through basketball and I connected with people in real life and I found my tribe and I found my community. And that helped me develop social skills. It helped me learn how to lose and deal with failure and that it's not the end of the world. And you can't replace those things with video games. You can't replace it with the connection that you have through a phone screen. This conversation we're having here is great, but if we were in person, it would be 10 times more powerful, right? So for her 13-year-old, try things, come up with things together and help him team up. And by team up, I don't necessarily mean joining any team. It's finding his tribe, finding his group of people that isn't through a screen, that isn't through a video game, that's in person, whether it's a sports team, whether it's the chess club, whether it's the band, whether it's a volunteer group. And by trying these different things, you're going to find like, oh, here is something I am passionate about because he probably just hasn't found it yet. And that's okay. He's 13. I liked all the sports equally, and I was kind of finding it at that age, but most adults haven't found that thing, that why, that purpose. So that would be, knowing what I know, that would be my best piece of advice. And the last one would be, don't be hard on yourself, because that's the other thing I see with so many moms is that if their kid's struggling, if they feel like they're not, in this case, maybe fulfilling their potential and settling for average, that they blame themselves. But it sounds like he's a good kid. You know, it could be a lot worse. And if you could find some things where he can go and serve other people, that will make a big difference too. I think that really changes the dynamic in your life when you go, oh, I had this tough life. I was undersized in a little place and people told me I couldn't do things. Well, Kyle Maynard didn't have legs and only had arms to his elbows. So who am I to complain? Like I have so much going for me. So that gratefulness is another element too.
This is really helpful. And I just to underscore what you're saying, that when we what I say, diversify your friendship circles. When we get out and go to try different things, that even they say, oh, well, I've never done that before. I don't know if I would like it. Try it. Try it and see. Because even if it's not the thing that your child likes, maybe it's the bridge to the next thing. And as we know, when we look back at our lives, sometimes that's exactly how it works. Give us your top tip. What would you hope people come away with after listening to this podcast, reading your books, or experiencing what you're saying when you're speaking?
Yeah. Thank you for that. And, yeah, there's so many questions. We're going to have to do this again because I have so many questions for you now after this where we're overlapping. And I'm like, well, how much scared of failure were you when you went on your first big, media appearance? And do you consider yourself an underdog? So like, I'm taking mental notes just so you know.
Clearly, I'll need to be on your show and you'll need to get a copy of my book.
Yes, we're doing it. We're doing it. So I went to a Christian high school for 2 years in California. And then I went back to Alaska. And I remember sitting in this class and I looked over at the wall and there was a poster and it said, do everything. Wait, let me see. Okay. So the poster said, evangelize the gospel everywhere you go. And when necessary, use words. And I always thought that was pretty cool. And what it really meant is walk the walk in your life. And I found in my life, the people that I look up to, whether it's basketball or anything, speaking, just mentors that I've admired and sought out, are people that live the thing that they're talking about. So it's the trainer that's in really good shape. It's like, well, that person must really know their stuff and they live it. They're eating right. They're putting the correct nutrients in their body. They're exercising, they're getting sleep. So the most powerful thing that I've learned from doing this and becoming a speaker has been a great help in my life, because I go and talk about attitude, but yes. I just like anybody can have the most rotten attitude and get mad at, like, how come the flight's delayed? I'm on planes a lot. So it tends to show up at airports, but because I know I'm the attitude guy and a lot of times I'll be wearing something that says like attitude, I have to walk the walk and live that. So as a parent, yes. Your kids or a coach or a mentor, your kids are looking at what you're doing and they're mirroring it. They're patterning it, they're modeling it, whether or not you realize it, they're watching. So the most powerful thing you can do is start with yourself and become the best version of you and work on all those things that we all have to work on, you know, our tempers, our relationships, our relationship with our phone. You can't yell at your kid about being on their phone too much if then you're on your phone all the time. Mm-hmm. So it starts with you. And like I said earlier, offer yourself some grace if you're going through a difficult time. I do these calls with parents, but a lot of times moms initially, and it comes to tears and they're caring so much. If you're listening to this right now, you are one of the 1% of the 1% who care and love your kids so much that you're willing to take your time to hopefully pick up a thing or two that can impact their life in a positive way. So give yourself some grace and know that it gets better and you aren't alone.
Well, let's just take that in. That is such a beautiful thing to say. And I will say, absolutely, this is something that we need to know and really believe. My listeners are amazing. They are realizing that we do need to talk to our kids about all of these tough topics. And if we don't talk about it, somebody else will, and we may not like what they have to say. So we do need to have the conversations. But as I often say, you have to have do-overs, and sometimes we mess up and we give ourselves grace and we try again and we get better and better, just as what we would wish for our kids. The mistakes we make, we can see them as learning opportunities. They're not the end of the road.
Yeah.
So that's really important. Give us the resource of the week. Where can we go to get more information about you, your book, and the work you're doing?
And I want to piggyback off of something you just said with this whole thing that you have of how to talk to your kids about anything. I think one of the most powerful things is when you make mistakes in front of them.
Oh yeah.
Just like you said, have that conversation of like, look, I messed up and look, this is hard, but I'm going to try better and to be that living example, but use that to have those conversations, because that's when kids will really be like, oh wow, Like instead of being like, oh, and sweep it under the rug, like, oh wow, mom and dad, they struggle at this too, but they're willing to work and improve, and I can do that in my life too. So I love
If we
that.
sweep it under the rug, then we just have a lumpy rug that we wind up tripping over. That's not helpful to
We don't
anybody.
want lumpy rugs.
Low lumpy rugs that we trip over. Yes.
So anyone that wants to check out our community, we have a Facebook community, speaking stuff, programs for schools, kids, parents. It's theattitudeadvantage.com/welcome. So we just put it all on one page. So it's kind of a one-stop shop, whatever you want there.
All right. Well, anybody who's listening who is running around, as I know you are, and you're driving somewhere, you're on a bus or you're riding a bicycle, you're taking a walk or some kind of exercise class, don't worry. I've got you. I'm going to put it right at the end of our show notes so that you can get right onto that website and you can read all of that stuff. And I just want to thank you so much for being on the show today, for
You.
sharing your insights, your strategies, what you've learned, how you've grown. It's been very educational, and I'm sure that a lot of people have learned a great deal and have many things that they would like to talk to their kids about tonight. So thank you.
And thank you as well. Love what you're doing. This is awesome, an awesome platform. So keep it going. Let's get you to 4 million, 5 million, 6 million downloads next.
That sounds great. And I've got my takeaways and sweet friends, I know you have yours, so let's discuss them. You can go up onto Facebook and go to the Dr. Robin Silverman page. We can chat about it on drrobinsilverman.com, twitter.com, which is now X, and we can go to Instagram, TikTok. You know, we are all there. I'm going to be going back and forth with Jesse LeBeau this whole week talking about what we've learned on this podcast. Share what you've learned. Let's put some memes out. I'm going to take some of the things that Jesse said. I'm going to slap them on some memes. You can share them with friends and you can remind yourself of some of the things that you really want to talk to your kids about, you want to remember. Put it right there on your Facebook, put it on your Twitter, put it right up on your Instagram, and you can remember and revisit it. And if you love this podcast like I did, I hope you'll go up to iTunes and rate and review it. It's really helpful for that ridiculous algorithm to hear that you love this podcast. You gave it 5 stars. You love Jesse. You want to have him talk more, and we can have him back. So keep putting those great 5-star reviews up. It's helpful to me, and it's helpful so that other people learn about this podcast and about Jesse LeBeau. That's all the time we have for today, my fellow parents, leaders, and educators. Thank you so much for tuning in to How to Talk to Kids About Anything. For more information on books, articles, speaking engagements, or curriculum, please go to drrobinsilverman.com. There's so many great podcasts are up there, and the show notes to this podcast will be up there as well. I look forward to weathering the storms and enjoying the sunny side of life together. And please remember, even on the days when you fall short, you've got this. You're here. You're getting the information you need. I know it's not easy, but never forget there's typically a tomorrow because parenting, teaching, coaching typically provides a do-over. And you want to take those do-overs. So if you heard something today and you thought, ugh, I did not say that about goals. I did not say that about failure. I did not say that about mistakes, or whoops, I did make a mistake and I did switch, kind of put it under the rug and tripped over it, and it was just insanity. Please bring it up again. You can say to your child, you know, here's what I wish I said. Here's what I said, and it's not actually what exactly happened. Let's discuss it. I see you and I'm right there with you. And as there are moments when we doubt our know-how, our choices, and our sweet sanity, please know you are 10 times the parent you think you are. Until next time, this is Dr. Robin Silverman with How to Talk to Kids About Anything. Please tune in again and keep connecting through conversation. See you next week.
You've been listening to How to Talk to Kids About Anything with Dr. Robin Silverman. For more information on books, articles, speaking engagements, or curriculum, please visit drrobinsilverman.com.